is an emergency alert.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between the Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on Mars,
this is Tyler Orton, watching his co-host Cameron fight teenage girls in the hallways of a school.
Again. And we're here this week to talk about the latest short Trek, the Picard tie-in, Children of Mars, as well as kind of dive into maybe what we can expect from the Picard series as we get ready to go into it and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think maybe let's take this episode more as a Picard primer sort of subspace versus an in-depth examination of all there is to decode from Children of Mars Cam. But why don't we start with the good stuff here? This is, as you say, the tie-in episode, and we see an attack on the planet Mars.
Yeah.
We see that newscast of one Admiral Picard responds to Mars attacks.
A still shot, not video, yes.
Yeah. And so that was interesting to me. Did you notice kind of the headline crawl that was going underneath the screen explaining what the attack was about?
No, I missed that.
It said, Rogue synths attack Mars.
Okay.
So I'm assuming this is the data tie-in here. Like this, by synths, they mean like synthetic humanoids.
Right.
And we're probably getting into kind of the positronic brain sort of thing. So I am fascinated by that.
I was looking at those ships and I'm like, I don't know, is that what a 24th century or nearly 25th century like Romulan ship might look like? I don't know. But yeah, the synth thing, well, that's really interesting.
So I think we're getting hints that about what the story is going to be when we arrive with Picard in 2499 here. Mm-hmm. So look, we can imagine this guy's been traumatized by having to potentially... Is this the rescue armada that he led that we've been hearing about in all the trailers, Cam?
It has to be, right?
Yeah, but... I'm just wondering, like, Earth and Mars are not that far apart.
Right.
And so when the one girl's father says, sorry, I can't see you at all for a year, I'm like, what a deadbeat dad.
Like, how long does it take to get from Mars to Earth?
Seconds? Like,
yeah, like I seem to recall in Enterprise, and that's way back. That's back, you know, in the early days of the Federation.
Yeah.
I mean, or before the Federation, they were making the trip out to Mars in, like, it seemed... very quickly.
Yes. I think this is probably the easiest rescue armada ever enlisted in Federation history.
Picard, like, literally just was on the vineyard, looked up, could see something in the far off distance, and just was like, I'm there.
Do you think most of his time is actually just spent, like, running towards, you know, whatever starbase was closest to the vineyard? You know,
sure.
Like, I don't know. This armada is, I'm curious about it, but obviously, look, we've seen trailers. I think they've been hinting a lot about it.
Yeah.
You go to the effort of calling it Children of Mars, and we really haven't seen life on Mars. That's another David Bowie reference for all you people that were listening to that acoustic rendition of Heroes playing in this.
Yeah, that's not a song that's not tired at all in movies.
In media? I know. Yeah. It's... Look, we talked about how David Bowie seems kind of like the perfect tie-in to Star Trek. That doesn't mean you need to keep tapping David Bowie songs. Like, maybe
and this was like, a cover of it. And it wasn't even the Wallflowers version.
No.
It was other one.
I don't recognize the artist.
This is a royalty-free artist.
Yeah. No kidding.
Short Treks, they got to cut their budget somewhere.
You know, I just got a text message. Alex Kurtzman tells me it was him. He wants to expand beyond just, you know, writing for film and television.
He's playing on, like, one of those plastic, like, ukuleles that small children play.
Yeah, he very much wants to do that It's a Wonderful World sort of ukulele cover.
Sure.
So, more power to you there. So
the Kurtzman Factory, they can do it all.
Yes. Speaking of doing it all, I think maybe we are getting a taste of what the aesthetics and the cinematography of Star Trek Picard are going to look like. What does that mean for you? Are you kind of happy with what we're seeing?
I mean, it doesn't look radically different than Star Trek Discovery. But I mean, I am very interested to see once we actually, I guess, get a little more into the actual world as to how it looks, because what we're seeing in this short trek, a lot of it is, even if these aren't locations we visited before, they're kind of, I don't know, like they don't have a familiarity that would really tie into, say, Next Generation.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm more interested, once we get to Picard, we get to his friends and maybe some of the environments we visited before, how they look different. I thought, though, like the Vulcan schoolmaster or whatever, like he had a bit of a Discovery look to him, like that update of the Vulcans.
I was looking at his ears and I was like, those look like a little bit more kind of distinct sort of ears. But yeah. I don't know how much of it is like is the fact that this is like a bald Vulcan. And we've seen, I think, Vulcans with shaved heads before, I believe. But is this maybe the first Vulcan who's just got male pattern baldness?
I'm now racking my brain because famously, of course, they always want to put like the bowl cut on Vulcans.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if they've ever let one skate by.
Bowl cut.
Okay, there was that admiral on Discovery that was a Vulcan.
Shaved head?
Shaved head, yeah.
Do you think it's an ode to one Patrick Stewart?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean,
hell of an ode.
Yeah. His greatest triumph in the world of Star Trek.
Making male pattern baldness sexy.
Yeah. This actor who played the Vulcan was like, damn right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he had like a distinctive look that looked a little bit of outside the world of what we would expect of, say, the Berman era Star Trek. So that's interesting just to see a bit of the visual reboot going on. I am really hoping, like, I know a lot of people are like, I don't want it to look like Discovery. I'm not necessarily like wholly adverse to that, but I would like to see it have a little bit of its own visual stamp just to feel different.
The one thing, and I'm not a big complainer with regards to the aesthetics, so much of the ship design here, but I do want to point out the ship designs remind me a lot of the ship designs that we saw in Star Trek Discovery. And we know that there's like, what, a 150 year difference at this point. And props to John Eaves, like the guy who's very famous for designing like half the ships we've ever seen in Star Trek, but I wonder if we can expand it and get some other ideas going on and just to make sure that there's that distinction between the Discovery era and the Picard era.
It also just feels like it's been a while since we've gotten some really unique, like destined to be iconic ship designs. Discovery hasn't had a lot of success there. So I'm hoping maybe we can get a little more in Picard.
The one I kind of like the most, though, is from last year's short trek featuring, or I guess 2018 short trek featuring Harry Mudd. Or no, this is Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. Remember the was it a duke or a count? His father-in-law had a very distinct-looking TOS-esque sort of ship that I really like the design of there.
I like the Ship of the Dead from the first season of Discovery, the Klingon ship, the sarcophagus ship. I thought that was kind of cool. Discovery has slowly but surely kind of won me over, but it was definitely not a design that out of the gate I thought was anything special.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would like to see a little bit more variety. A lot of them have kind of the look of the ones in these short treks. So they're very sleek looking. You know, they've got some almost like hot rod racer type edges to them, but they don't leap out the way that, you know, when you watch the original series, when you watch TNG, especially TNG, like the various species ships look very unique and distinct on their own.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm not seeing a lot of that so far in the Kurtzman era.
Yeah. One of my complaints sometimes though is like sometimes ships kind of look like blob shapes. It's like... I've said it before, but I think like a great testament to a ship design is if I, who am not an artist, if I can just kind of draw it on like a napkin and people can kind of get an idea accurately of what it looks like. And so that's easy to do with the Enterprises. It's easy to do with Voyager and Deep Space Nine.
That was one of the rules, actually, that Berman had with the designing of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Where they really wanted to go kind of crazy with the design, and Rick Berman said, no, I want kids to be able to draw this.
So, and that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing more of those. Remember the first, Klingon ships that were kind of like the shuttle pods that Lorca made the escape on?
Yeah.
And they were almost too sleek, you know, like they just kind of look like shards floating through space. And like,
that's a good term, shards in space. That's kind of like what these looked like to me too.
Yeah.
And I'm sure someone with maybe like a stronger visual eye for ships would really spot what makes them unique. But to someone like me who doesn't have the world's greatest memory for ship designs, they don't really stand out.
So,
whereas I would not say that about you know, a lot of the older designs, or like the world of Star Wars, where a lot of the ships stand out to me.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, we've been kind of picking apart the minutia of it, and that's something that we try to avoid, because we usually try to take these short treks more holistically from a storytelling perspective. So why don't we do that? And I think maybe we definitely wanted to get into all the stuff up front that people would be curious about.
Kind of the mythology-based stuff.
Yeah. How does this short trek work for you as a story in and of itself, Cam?
I mean, as a story, it's a lot of cliches. Really, I think, honestly, the only thing interesting to me about it is the details we can pull from Picard. I have real questions as to how much of this whole Mars attack actually factors into Picard versus just being backstory.
Yeah.
But, you know, the story of, yeah, two girls who are fighting and both have parents on Mars that have some sort of connection after the Mars attack. I mean, it's not a bad idea. It just feels really
trite
and cliche ridden,
yeah,
or riddled. Like this whole, just the child bullying stuff. It's like, I've seen this in a million movies, like the things I'm seeing in this short trek, and it's played so sincerely that it just kind of comes across as kind of goofy.
Like, you can't take it that seriously. It's taken itself so seriously that you, as a viewer, can't take it seriously. Cam, I was trying to stifle my laughter when the fight broke out in the hallway.
Oh.
Like, it was just the most, like, embarrassing thing to watch.
Second, maybe only in my mind, to the scene where there's the great tragedy, and we get the girl flashing back to, like, her mother doing tongue tricks.
Yeah, is that what you think of your happiest memories of your mother?
Well, yes, but that's beside the point.
Okay, yeah. Hey, it would have been great if we got another flashback to the other girl with her dad saying, "Can't see you for a year, I live on Mars."
Well, like, okay, if you're going to have this moment where they have a flashback, did they just not have a couple $1,000s to just shoot a scene in a field where, like, they're frolicking with their parents or something? Like, just give me something.
Well, I wonder if this is kind of something they did in post-production. They realized there should be kind of a memory of a parent. And the only other memory was, sorry, kid, I'm not going to see you for a year.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a little awkward.
Yeah.
So,
but, I mean, just showing these very, like, look, this stuff happens in kids' lives. It's not funny, and I don't mean to make fun of, like, bullying in the real world, but it just comes across as earnest to the point of being goofy, especially when you're scoring it to, like, the most trite song choice humanly possible.
Yeah, well, let's maybe break it down, you know, and talk about what the message is. The message is, so through a series of misunderstandings in the course of one morning, two girls escalate violence towards one another.
Yeah.
But when their parents are seemingly violently murdered in a rogue synth attack, they hold hands.
Yeah.
I don't know what the message is there. It's like we can overcome our differences when we're exposed to trauma. Like,
yeah.
It's like, okay.
Or we need to be able to rely on one another because that's the only thing that's going to hold us strong in times of crisis. I don't know.
My concern is that it feels as if they're trying to do a Star Trek story.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact that they're trying so hard to do it means that they're not really accomplishing or not very successful at what they're accomplishing. The thing is that they always want to make these short treks look very good.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this is 8 minutes long, I just wonder if they were kind of looking at their budget and, like, how many, you know, pages this could be.
Yeah.
And if we get a 15-minute long short trek, it means double the budget. So they're like, okay, well, let's keep, you know, costs down so we can keep the aesthetics up. And
yeah,
this is what we ended up with. I don't know. Like, if I was going to get a Mars attack story, you know, not not starring Jack Nicholson, of course. you know, it would be great at the end where, like, one of the girls turned to the other and said, "Can't we all just get along?"
Then Tom Jones starts up. It's not unusual.
Yeah, instead of David Bowie, it should have been Tom Jones, like, a cover the entire time. Okay, I think we've perfected Children of Mars, Cam.
Yeah. And the whole time you see the little ships, like, attacking, all you hear is, "Ack, ack, 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 ack."
I was wondering why there's all those burning cows, like, wandering through the background. Like, that was a bizarre scene, too. All makes sense
Did
now.
Did Picard play dual roles? One is Picard, one is, like, a gambler in Las Vegas?
It makes sense to me. Yeah. No, a gambler in the south of France, like Monte Carlo, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. But he's got, like, the huge, like, thick French accent.
Right.
And a goatee. So, okay. We've perfected Children of Mars here. But I think there's, like, another inexpensive short Trek story that they could have told that would not have made us kind of groan while we're watching this. And I know there's some people out there like, well, we should take bullying seriously, or maybe that's something they haven't really tackled in Star Trek.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought they would have overcome by then is like, this was like violence, like child on child violence.
I actually made a note as I was watching it. I didn't take a lot of notes on this one, but that was one thing I did write, was this whole like child bullying story would so not exist under the Berman era.
Yeah.
Like, when they're kind of going off the edict of what Rod Roddenberry, when they're going...
I want to go off the Rod Roddenberry edict.
The
it was like, what, 13 when it premiered?
Yeah.
It's like, get like more George Michael on the show.
Skateboards and rollerblades.
Yeah.
Slap bands. The Gene Roddenberry edict that, you know, there's like no conflict. I don't think they ever would have done a child bullying story. So this did feel very much like a modern take on Trek. I guess J.J. Abrams did that as well with the Vulcans, where you had like young Spock pushing the other Vulcan into the learning pod.
Yeah, but you know, that to me, that moment worked for me because it was Vulcans testing Spock and actually getting a reaction out of him in a huge effort.
Yeah.
This was like two people that didn't exchange two words to each other.
Yeah.
And it was just a series of escalating violence against each other. I'm just like, is this actually a good story to tell? Like, I don't know.
And it also did not feel like the most honest representation of child bullying.
No. And look,
like,
if
it
I
was
can,
a fast escalation.
If I can make a sweeping generalization, but like a lot of people say maybe kind of the violent escalation would be more prone to young boys, and whereas like young girls are more prone to some of the social bullying as well. And I think that would have been a more interesting take, to see here.
Right.
So I kind of think Children of Mars is a bit of a lost opportunity here.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of has that feel that like they wanted a Picard tie-in short Trek that would not give away anything to do with the upcoming Picard series.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, well, I'm getting the sense this whole armada that Picard was a part of is not going to factor much into the plot. It's going to be more of a bit of a backstory, maybe only spoken about in dialogue.
Well, I think it's going to be a driving force in his psyche, though.
Sure.
That's what I believe.
Sure. But it felt like something they could kind of work into a short Trek that wouldn't give anything away. I mean, do you think Patrick Stewart has watched this?
Probably not.
And it does have kind of that cheap feel that Ask Not had as well, where you're kind of like, okay, like, sure.
I definitely think this one cost a lot more than Ask Not.
It had more like CG and everything.
And on-location shots. And that's why I think this one was kept to 8 minutes long, is because they wanted to have kind of an explosive sort of climax. But the problem was is that buttressed by a narrative story that we just didn't find very compelling.
Right. Do you get the sense that the budgets on short Treks were maybe a little cut from the season one? I feel like the first batch, like the Harry Mudd one, the Brightest Star,
Calypso,
they seemed a little more willing to spend, although there's also more short Treks in the second season, so I don't really know. Maybe they spread the same budget over 6 episodes versus 4?
It's so hard to say, though, especially since we also got 2 animated features, and I wonder about the cost of those. But they weren't skipping on dollars when it came to, say, the trouble with Edward.
No.
But I also think that, Q&A, which took place in a turbolift, was relatively, inexpensive.
Yeah.
So
you're paying, I guess, actors that cost more money with Q&A.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I'm just really fascinated to, because I don't have a sense yet of what the sort of response to this short Trek is, because I think there was a lot of people really excited for this one because it is the Picard tie-in. This is their first taste of the Picard series. I'm laughing as I say it.
Yeah.
But I think it will probably disappoint, but I also wonder if a short Trek that happens before the Picard series could ever really deliver something that would satisfy people. I don't know. Especially without Patrick Stewart in it.
One thing that might redeem it, though, I wonder if one of these two young girls appear, at Starfleet Academy when...
Sure.
Because like, I think this takes place, what, maybe 10 years before Picard
Yeah.
is, featured in Star Trek Picard. So would be the perfect age for somebody to be like a young ensign in Starfleet or something. So maybe one of these girls makes another appearance. And
that's possible. You know, yeah, one of them could be maybe a recurring guest character or something in season one.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
One of the stars of the show, soon to bump Patrick Stewart right off.
Just a question for you, though. Was that blue snot or blue blood coming out of the alien girl when she got punched in the face?
It looked like blood to me, I guess.
I don't know. It was blue.
And then I was like, wait, is this a metaphor for like the rich?
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm like, no, I doubt it.
Okay. So why don't we do something a little fun before we get into more of the Picard primer stuff, though? Do we want to rank our season two Short Treks at this point?
Yeah. What's your overall feelings on the second season of Short Treks?
Well, it's interesting because there's six of them versus the four that we got. Mm-hmm. I wonder... I look back at season one, I think there's maybe a little bit more consistency, but I am all down for wild swings to the fences. It is like 8 to 15 minutes of my time.
Yeah.
And I think they've had so much fun playing within these universes that I just don't care, you know? Like, so I think it'd be, like, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, like, it'd be great if we had, like, one a week, you know, and just to fill in all the, you know, time that Star Trek isn't on the air. Like, I would totally watch that. I think it'd be kind of an easy thing to do. Like, it's a vast universe, and you can tell that they've tapped, like, creators that just love this as well.
I kind of wish they would untether themselves, I think, from some of these, you know, newer series on the air. I know that that's probably the draw, and why people are tuning in to watch this one is because of the Picard tie-in, but I kind of wonder if they don't really serve a whole lot of long-term value versus like Ephraim and Dot, you know, the animated one, just as an example, really is this standalone unique thing dealing with Star Trek canon that you can totally just watch on its own.
Yeah.
And I think has more long-term value than a tie-in that maybe feels a little superficial.
I'll say this. So in terms of long-term value, people like watching short things like online.
Yeah.
Like, that's why YouTube's so successful. Mm-hmm. I think this actually kind of makes sense for bolstering the CBS library.
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't feel like watching like a full episode, they might accidentally find themselves watching like five or six of these in a row.
Right.
And I think it's just because of the nature of the internet and how it's affecting viewing habits, though. So I don't know. Like, I Children of Mars, not our favorite, but if somebody's like on a viewing, you know, spree, and maybe this is okay if, you know, CBS All Access continues to play after you've just watched Ephraim and Dot.
But don't you think it would be cooler maybe with some of the Short Treks is to maybe like split them up even more, where we just do like, I don't know, here's a short Vulcan story. It's not related to Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not related to Picard. It's just the creator came in, had a fun idea for a Vulcan story. Here you go, which is what I'm kind of referencing with Ephraim and Dot, where it's just its own thing. It's tied to the Star Trek universe, but it's not like, you got to watch this as your primer as we go into Picard.
Yeah, no, I'm totally down for more of those sorts of stories. You know, even like look at The Trouble with Edward, you know, there was a Pike appearance in it, but that one totally stands on its own. You could take Anson Mount out of it and boom.
Yeah.
So, so Cam, why don't we rank our Short Treks, which I asked you to do and you decided not to, instead peppering me with questions.
That's right.
Yeah. Do we want to do top to bottom or bottom to top?
Let's go bottom to top.
Okay. Well, kick it off, sir.
Okay. Well, I thought the weakest was Children of Mars. I just don't have a lot of enthusiasm for this one. But the next one I put was The Girl Who Made the Stars, followed by Ask Not, the Pike-centric one, followed by Q&A, followed by Ephraim and Dot, the animated adventure. And then I thought the best of the batch was The Trouble with Edward.
Okay. Not too much difference between you and me, but at bottom of mine was The Girl Who Made the Stars. To me, I was like, is that the Star Trek story?
It
featured Michael Burnham and her father telling a story, but...
Yeah.
After that, I have Children of Mars, then number four, Ask Not, number three, Q&A, number two, Ephraim and Dot, and number one, The Trouble with Edward.
So very similar.
Yeah. What is it about The Trouble with Edward that do you think is so appealing to people like you and me?
I think, well, first off, I think it's very telling that we both had Ephraim and Dot and Trouble with Edward at the top, which they really do take a really fun look at Star Trek canon. They're very playful. They're irreverent. They're kind of kidding the elements of the show and of the franchise, but they're doing it in a creative way that doesn't feel like here's a very simple story you've seen before, which the ones at the bottom of my list do.
Yeah. And for me, I'm just, you're having fun within the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
That's what we need to see more of. Like, I like Star Trek Discovery, but the best moments are when they're having fun. I find that they take themselves very seriously the vast majority of the time.
Yeah.
And I just want the show to loosen up a lot more. And the fact that we're getting short treks that show that they can loosen up, that the creators behind it have that ability, I'm saying, like, guys, go for it. Just keep doing this. So.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the two that I've got at the bottom, I think we both do just in a different order, The Girl Who Made the Stars and Children of Mars, I mean, they're not fun. They're just kind of like, oh, that's a very pleasant at best, earnest story.
Yes, yes.
That, let's be honest, that type of story would impact someone a lot more told over the course of an actual Star Trek episode. Whereas if you want to just go fun and kind of silly, a short trek is the best kind of vehicle for that.
But I do wonder how different audiences would respond. You and I, we are white males in our 30s. So it's we had a listener, Jason Kerr, he wrote in and said that he thought that The Girl Who Made the Stars was just perfect. He watched it with his daughter, really responded well to that. So, you know, look, this is all subjective, so take that as you will.
And in the review of that, of the two animated ones, like, I did have kind things to say, at least about the intentions of The Girl Who Made the Stars. Like, I really appreciate what they were going for. It just didn't impact me in a big way, but it's one where I go, like, I'm glad that's out there.
Yeah.
Versus, like, for me, The Children of Mars, I'm just like, I guess. Again, I'm really curious to hear what the feedback on that one is.
I don't know, Cam. You got to see a still image of one Patrick Stewart. So,
could they not just get a bit of video? Like a little bit of just him just talking. You don't need audio. It can just be him like talking on this broadcast.
It is kind of like, I know why they do that from like a creator perspective, because he's an iconic character. But like realistically, would the Federation News Network be like, let's go to the guy leading the charge, like, you know, in real time?
Yeah.
Like that was kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
So there you go, sir. Why don't we go into some bit of a Picard primer sort of stuff here? I've been watching some episodes in anticipation, and I guess there's some more episodes on my list that I want to watch. But
you've been watching Captain's Holiday on a loop. You're like, this is it, Picard
And Cupid. Thank you. So what I want a sequel to Cupid in Star Trek Picard.
I've just been watching the pilot of Deep Space Nine.
Okay. Cam, can you imagine if they ever did, if Star Trek Discovery ever did a Cupid episode and we just saw the characters wandering around Sherwood Forest dressed up in tights?
Yeah, because like, it's not abnormal to imagine a world where we get some sort of holodeck story in the future of, you know, the Kurtzman era of Star Trek. But the thing about Cupid was, it was literally them just like through magic going to Sherwood Forest.
Yeah, it had a very kind of a shore leave sort of feel, like as shore leave as in the TOS episode where there's a lot of whimsy going on. But I just don't know if we'll never necessarily get episodes like Cupid in Star Trek Picard.
Do you think we'll get it in the Berman era?
The Berman era.
I mean, the Kurtzman era, I should say.
Tough to say.
Stories like, the Section 31 and Discovery, it's hard to expect that.
But what I've noticed with Discovery, and we'll see how it plays out in Picard, but they want to keep a fairly consistent tone throughout. And which is like kind of a trait of, I guess, like, TV nowadays, as opposed to keeping it kind of episodic, so you can jump from genre to genre. I think that's actually been to the detriment of Discovery. I mean, for us, like a highlight of Discovery is when you kind of jump to a different tone with magic to make the sanest man go mad.
Yeah.
Like that was fantastic to me.
We didn't get anything like that in season two.
No, it was very consistent tone. But like I said, that they do have like lighter moments within an episode, which I understand. My concern with Star Trek Picard is it just going to be kind of that monolithic tone throughout? Like they set the tone, and I wonder, is it going to be a very serious tone with some light moments within it?
Yeah, and the fact that didn't Patrick Stewart say it would be like a novel?
Yeah, and the worst thing that I'm hearing nowadays from like TV writers is like, well, my show is like a 10-hour movie. And I'm like, that's not what I want to hear from TV people anymore. Like, let TV be TV, because you can work within this format, do things that you cannot do in film. You know, let film be film, let TV be TV, because these are completely different mediums.
Right, yeah. And Yeah, like I would like to see a little more diversity in the kind of tones and storytelling approaches in a series, but I'm not getting a sense of that anytime soon.
It's going to be tough because I think what they need to do with at least the first half of season one of Picard is kind of establish what's going on in this universe. And I just don't see time for like Vash to show up and Q to be like egging Picard on once again.
I think it may be a show like Lower Decks where we see something like that.
Which I'm all for. Like that yeah. sounds like really fun to me, you know? And I think they could have serious moments in Lower Decks too. And, you know, like that might be the potential that we're looking for with that genre hopping that we're talking about.
Or also the Nickelodeon kids show. That would be a great opportunity to do that.
It would, but my suspicion though is like they're going to have a consistent tone because it is like children's animated. Like, but although, you know, there's lots of animated children's shows. Did you ever watch Johnny Bravo?
I did not, no.
Well, why do you walk around dressed like him then? That's kind of bizarre.
It's mere coincidence.
Okay. So, but I mean, a show like Johnny Bravo, like they could do all kinds of like funny stories within. I just, the trick with Trek, just don't take yourself so seriously. And even if you're doing like a kid's show, I think that I look at the girl who made the stars.
Yeah.
And again, it was a very earnest, very kind of serious sort of story. And if they're doing that for the children's animated thing every week, that might be kind of a tough go for a lot of kids all the time.
Yeah. Because kids, I think, like something that's a little bouncier and a little more playful, but there can be moments of intensity for sure. And I think Star Trek does all those things really well. Like it shifts tones really well.
Yeah.
And I would like to see a little more of that. And I think, you know, the kids show, this is a good opportunity for it. And I mean, the original animated series did that really well.
Yeah. Just for me personally, I'll tell you some of the stuff that I've been watching as of late with regards to kind of a primer to Picard, but The Drumhead, which is kind of a fantastic showcase for Patrick Stewart tapping into kind of the morality of the Federation, which I think is awesome. And then him going up against Admiral Satie, played by Gene Simmons, just a fantastic performance from her. And yeah. It kind of gets into some of the toxicity underlying some elements of the Federation that we often talk about. Mm-hmm. And my suspicion is they do want to tap into that some more in Star Trek Picard. Presumably, we're dealing with a Romulan refugee crisis.
Right.
Like, that could be a very interesting thing with a lot of parallels to what's going on today. Mm-hmm. And did you read the Variety article featuring Patrick Stewart that came out this week?
I haven't yet, no.
It's worth a read, but he talks about just how he's kind of horrified by a lot of what's going on in the world right now.
You're not alone.
Yeah, but he pointed at Brexit specifically. And it's, look, Brexit's essentially, if you want to really pare it down, it's kind of an English nationalist movement and very much kind of a response to the notable problem of migration. Like Britain does have like a migration problem.
Right.
This is their answer towards addressing it. I don't think it's a great answer. So now we've got Brexit at this point, and Patrick Stewart's horrified by this. So I think he's going to be pushing for some of the political stuff in Star Trek. I still laugh at all of the Facebook group administrators who say that Star Trek's not the place to talk politics. Which
that gets so ridiculous.
I mean, you don't need to be posting like stories like "I hate Trump" in these groups. But the thing is, like, the fact that you can't talk about like parallels between what's going on in today's society and how Star Trek is showcasing that in like an episode of Discovery or something. I mean, that's just so ridiculous.
I mean, not just Star Trek, in popular media right now, incredibly, like, there's like strong parallels everywhere. Like, whether, you know, look, whatever side of the divide you stand on the, like, say, Trump issue, that has influenced a huge section of the media, film and television, over the last, like, 4 years.
Well, if I can go backwards a bit back to Children of Mars, I'll ask you more of a serious question, though, because I think there are different allusions to 9/11 going on here.
Oh, yeah, big
and,
time.
And there's even, like, in that crawl, it said, you know, estimated 3,000 dead in Mars attacks. I think that number is going to go up significantly since it looked as if nukes were going off on the planet.
Yeah.
But just for me, I do remember 9/11 vividly. Like, that was something that happened when I was a teenager. Just a year earlier, I had been living down in the United States. So I had lots of friends in Seattle. Our next door neighbor had just retired from the FBI as an agent there. So it's like, it was something that was in my head. I remember waking up in that morning, hearing about it on the radio, and I was like, wait, what are they talking about? I ran upstairs, turned on the TV. I saw the second plane crash had already happened at that point, and they're just replaying all the video. Family was horrified. We ended up going to school that morning. At a certain point, the teachers just let the whatever students want to go down to the library and just watch things unfold. Mm-hmm. There's another American classmate of mine. She was just like very, very horrified by everything that was going on. So, I mean, that Children of Mars, I can relate to kind of that trauma being a bonding experience sort of thing.
Oh, totally.
Do you remember 9/11?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I remember I had the day off work. And I was asleep, and my mom came in, and she kind of woke me up. Like, she didn't actually come over and, like, shake me awake or anything. She just kind of, like, opened the door and spoke in the door at me, and I was, like, three quarters asleep. So my comprehension was, like, nothing. But she said, like, you know, terrorists have flown a plane into the World Trade Center. And I remember, like, not comprehending what she said and being like, what is my mom talking about? Like, they didn't even make sense, and I kind of fell back asleep. And I woke up like 10 minutes later. I was like, what did she say? And I like got up. And then I remember a friend of the show, Mark Carter, who was on our Star Trek V episode. He came over that day and like we watched TV most of the day. We were just like watching like CNN.
Yeah. It's something that it has kind of that collective memory burnt into all of us. Like we all have stories here. Mm-hmm. And I think, look, Star Trek can continue to tap into that and be kind of a narrative exercise. I think that's going to be great. And I want Star Trek Picard to do episodes like The Drumhead, where you are kind of tapping into those kinds of things. I think that's a very important thing.
Oh, yeah. But I look at, again, going back to Children of Mars, you could do that story. It's just like this was done in such a clumsy way.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be a really powerful short trek, would be these two people that come together in a moment like this. But, like, when you score it to this song choice and just this, like, kind of very like over the top bullying situations, it just does not play.
It's a little on the nose.
It's way too on the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another episode that I'm going to be watching, though, I think Family is an important one. I Borg as well. And I think that's probably going to tie in a little bit into the mythology. Drumhead is also good because at a certain point, remember when Admiral Sate is saying to Picard, like, oh, that must have been horrible for you, being assimilated by the Borg and giving up all the Starfleet secrets. Oh, how many people died in that? 11,000. That must haunt you at night.
Yeah.
Stewart had like a stiff upper lip during that performance, but I think, I mean, it does. It must torture this guy. And we saw that really not come to fruition, I think, until maybe Star Trek First Contact. Do you think Picard's over it at this point?
Is he ever over that?
Has he ever dealt with it properly? Even Family, I don't get the sense that he...
I don't think in Family he dealt with it.
Rolling around in the mud with your brother.
I think all that did was allow him to reconnect with sort of his family unit for support.
Yeah.
But I don't think that resolved any of the issues. I mean, I would guess that maybe some of the storytellers would argue that he resolved his issues in First Contact. But I think there's plenty of room still to mine that for, you know, long-term ramifications.
Yeah. Another great one that I just watched was Darmok. You know.
Yeah.
What can I say, man?
We did an episode way back at the start of the podcast. I'll post a link to that as well as a few of the other Picard episodes we've done on the blog. But Darmok was one that was ranked very high in our, for like all of us. And I remember we had Dave Boris on that episode as well.
If you and I were at Tanagra, would you be Darmok or would you be Jalad?
Well, obviously, Darmok.
I think that makes me Jalad?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Just when the walls fell?
That's right.
Okay, gotcha. another one I haven't rewatched yet. This is one that I love rewatching. Who Watches the Watchers?
It's, yeah, yeah.
I've said it before on the podcast, but it's a great what happens when you've got to choose between a bad decision or an even worse decision. And yeah. I love seeing Picard in that situation there.
Well, both that episode as well as the episode First Contact are like the all-time Picard First Contact moments. Like, they're just so inspiring to watch.
I think there's got to be some, like, explorer elements in Star Trek Picard. That's really what I want to do. I don't think we've done enough exploring on Star Trek Discovery. Like,
no.
We've
done actually very little.
Yeah, like Terra Elysium, that was that. We encountered the organic sphere.
Mm-hmm.
I think let's Discovery do more discovering.
Well, I mean, they're going to be doing probably a lot of that next season, so it looks like we might get a bunch.
all they really need at this point is a star chart, because the galaxy's been incredibly well mapped and traveled by like the 31st century, right?
That's very true.
So
yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
StarTrek.com actually has like a good solid list of episodes that they're recommending. I named a whole bunch right now, but they also mentioned The First Duty.
Yep.
Which I think that's kind of a strong way of Patrick Stewart just really putting his boot to the butt of Wesley and telling him, you know.
And I know we in the past did an episode where we really recommended Disaster as a really interesting episode for Picard that maybe doesn't make a lot of lists.
No, I think that's a totally great one. Like, how often do we see Picard in that light? You know,
not
like
often.
Babysitting, essentially, and him having to realize, oh, I have a responsibility, I have a duty right now to take care of these kids. Otherwise, they're going to plummet to their deaths in a turbo lift. You know, yes, perfect. These ones kind of go without saying, but, you know, Inner Lights, Chain of Command, Parts 1 and 2.
Tapestry.
And I think Tapestry. Yeah. I think those. And I also wonder, Tapestry, we've got to get a Q appearance by the season finale, right? Like, will we be, like, just completely...
We have to, right?
Like, we're going to be crushed if we don't have, like, Q appear at the very end as, like, a sort of cliffhanger.
Part of me is like, you know what? It's so obvious that it's not going to happen. Because it's just like, I always want storytellers to be a step ahead of me. And to me, this just seems so obvious that why wouldn't you do it? And I'm hoping they're like... No, we've got something better. I want it to be better.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I'm down if it's better.
Yeah.
We can get Q2 played by Keegan DeLancey instead of John DeLancey.
Yeah, yeah.
If they really wanted to surprise you, they should just open up the season premiere with the series premiere with John DeLancey. He's like, "Let me tell you a story about my friend Picard." Eh?
And he like opens a giant book,
and then there's... the camera zooms into the book, and it fades into outer space. Like, no. It sideswipes into outer space,
and then the series ends with him closing the book and going, "But that's a story for a different time."
Cam, I think we've just fixed Star Trek Picard. Like, I don't know, CBS. Like, these ideas are out there for free. Just
and
saying.
He puts the book back on the shelf, and in the like right next to that one is a book that says Chakotay on it.
And then we pull back from the bookshelf, and we see it's Patrick Stewart doing his one man A Christmas Carol show. And he's like, wow. So, what are some of your fears for Star Trek Picard, though?
Well, I mean, when you say the season is like a giant novel,
yeah,
that's all well and good if the central story is all firing on all cylinders. But we saw with season one of Discovery that there was a lot of problems going on.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping they at least have learned from maybe some of the long-form arcing issues of Discovery's first two seasons that aren't going to impact Picard, because I think people... And not everyone, because there's a lot of, you know, online trolls, but a lot of people, at least, you know, us and a lot of our friends, were very patient with Discovery, being like, okay, we like the characters, we like the overall vision of the show, we're just kind of waiting for it to find its footing, because we know that the potential is there.
Yeah.
I don't think Picard has that luxury in a lot of eyes. Like, I think this show has
Claws out.
Yeah. I think this show has to... click with people in that first season.
Yeah.
I don't think it can kind of be fumbling around.
I kind of think already, even though we knew very little about Discovery going in, and we probably do we know even less about Star Trek Picard going in? I don't know. Or is it about on par?
I feel like we maybe know more about the overall mythology elements of Picard, at least the ones that are gonna tease us with that maybe just all vanish after episode two, but so far it looks like we have at least a sense of the world.
At least we know a bunch of the characters that will be appearing, which is good. That gets some good graces there. So
I remember seeing ads for Discovery where they would like list, you know, the character faces, and I'm just like, this means nothing to me.
I know. Remember when we went to Las Vegas for the big convention, and they had the first ever Discovery panel, and there's all these banners that had unfurled overnight in the main lobby there.
Yeah.
And there was one that said Voke.
Yeah.
And they had never announced this character Voke, so we were all just kind of staring at it, and all we did was shrug. It meant absolutely nothing to us.
And it wasn't just the Voke one, to be fair. It was quite a few of those banners.
Okay, that's true.
At least I was looking at them going like, well... I know that, you know, Sonequa Martin-Green is the star, And I don't really know who any of these people are besides Michelle Yeoh and, you know, Jason Isaacs.
It's just weird and awkward, though, when you started tugging on the banners and wearing them as capes around the convention. So I had to have a conversation with you privately about that. With regards to the overall story, though, I do have hopes that if there are elements about kind of like maybe a Romulan refugee crisis, some sort of Borg connection to the remnants of the Romulan Star Empire.
Yeah.
I think that seems like a compelling jumping off point for Star Trek Picard. And we're following a character who we adore.
Yeah.
With an actor who we absolutely find just hypnotizing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've got things kind of in their corner right now. It's just about them being able to kind of like stick the landing. How patient do you think people are going to be with after the series premiere?
I think they give it a few episodes. I think it's around episode three tends to be the deciding one where people are like, I'm getting annoyed. I think the first two are pretty safe.
I wonder, though, if we're not going to get a full sense of the scope and the scale of the story in episode one, and then we're going to have to wait a week, and it could be kind of frustrating. Because I think you and I enjoyed our Star Trek Discovery binge watch more than, like, I think we got frustrated watching it week to week because I think the writers were asking a lot from the viewers to be invested in this Red Angel mystery when they never explained why Starfleet even cared about these, like, signals appearing in the sky. But when we watched it, you know, in binge mode, we didn't have to really think or get caught up about that.
Yeah, you can kind of gloss over the annoying elements that kind of get dragged out over three episodes when you watch it in a binge mode. I am curious, just thinking about it now, it just popped into my head, but, you know, this short track had the, as you said, the reference to, like, the synth attack.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with an 80s rock concert. But could this be a way of them basically writing androids out of the ongoing future of Star Trek?
As kind of almost like replacement humans, you know, like kind of, because we talked about like why haven't like androids or holograms just kind of taken over day-to-day life or kind of day-to-day chores, you know, like that's interesting. Maybe that is kind of, maybe these are rogue synths because they've been used as servants, you know, like maybe that positronic brain that, you know, Noonien Soong had perfected with Data. Maybe if you don't have Soong behind the brain, you get defective robots that can only be used as... What were those holograms doing? Like scrubbing like corridors or something in that one Voyager episode? Like the
something like that, yeah.
Oh, it was part of the Lewis Zimmerman arc that was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're scrubbing like dilithium chambers.
Yeah.
Maybe those rogue synths don't want to be doing that. Maybe this is the excuse to say, hey, I don't know what we're doing with androids. Let's maybe kind of put them into the closet or something.
Yeah, like we just don't really want to deal with that right now, with the story directions we want to go.
Yeah, just for me, just speculation on my part. But I kind of have to think, like, this is how you tie in, like, the Data / before stuff.
Right.
We've seen...
It's all before, Tyler. There's no more Data, damn it.
You are really hung up and really, I guess, splitting hairs on whether or not it's Data.
No, it's Data. I 100% think it's Data.
Okay.
I just would love to think that they have to deal with B4.
Sure. But, I mean, if we're seeing, like, Data in dream sequences, which I think, like, if it's Data in a TNG era...
It's a holodeck, right? It's not a dream sequence, you think?
No, I think it's a dream sequence.
You think so? Okay.
That's a weird holodeck program. Computer, I want you to program my deceased commander painting in my vineyard in his old uniform from 30 years ago. And engage!
Like, and they're like, Werner Herzog, how'd you get in here?
Like, I don't know, like, to me, it's kind of, it's Brent Spiner is playing Data, whether it's because, you know, Data's memory engrams have taken over the body of before,
sure.
Who knows? Like, I'm down for kind of giving Data a better send-off than what Geordi gave him in Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah.
Oh, I am going to rewatch Star Trek Nemesis.
I am too.
You know, because that's where we last left off the crew.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'd love to hear, because we do know that one Jonathan Frakes not only directing episodes 3 and 4, but he'll be appearing along with Marina Sirtis in at least one episode.
Yep.
Seems as if they're retired, judging by that bucolic lifestyle that they're living in the trailers.
It's a cabin, Tyler.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's his other friend who's living in the space trailer, right? The Michelle Hernandez character. She,
that's right.
She appears to be in a trailer. That took me a minute. Okay. I would love it if there was just a line where, like, Riker was like, yeah, after the Titan, it's great that I finally got my chance in the seat of the Enterprise, in the command chair. Like, I would just love to hear that one throwaway line. That's all Riker ever really wanted. It's why he stuck around that ship for, like, 15 years when he was getting, like, command offers after 3 years, you know?
Yeah.
That would just make me so happy for his character.
Me too. I mean, I guess his career as a captain wasn't that long, really.
But I don't know. He may have retired last year.
Sure.
That's what, like an 18-year career as a captain?
I guess when you take into account how long he was a first officer.
Well, remember we also did the math on like how long it was between the time that he graduated from the academy to the time that he was named like first officer aboard the Enterprise?
Right.
It was an incredibly short period of time. I think it was like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So, But you're right. It's not like we had like the big long adventures of Riker aboard the Enterprise, whether it's the E or the F, who mm-hmm. knows. Do you think we'll get an appearance of some Enterprise namesake in this? Maybe not in episode one, but somewhere down the road?
Okay, so I have two thoughts on this. One, no. Like, okay. They save that for later down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, going back to the Short Trek.
By later down the road, do you mean later in the season or like later in the series?
Season two or something season two. Like that. Okay. Like, okay. Maybe they just want to focus on the story of season one, and you've got obviously like Seven in there and Hugh and like those elements. They don't need to throw in all the elements right in season one. But also then I'm kind of thinking about the Short Trek, and we just see, as we said, the still of Patrick Stewart. Maybe he was in the Enterprise at the time, and they do not want to show in the Short Trek what the Enterprise looks like at that point in time.
Yeah.
They want to save that for the show. So that's also possible.
Yeah. Look, I think they kind of know. Like, if we're getting the 1701,
I hope they know.
Well, if we're getting the 1701 in Discovery, they got to give us at least one Enterprise, whether it's the E or the F or something. Like, But I wonder with regards to the E, this was commissioned under CBS.
Mm-hmm.
The E first made its appearance in the films. We never saw a Sovereign class ship appear in the Dominion War.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if CBS can make any sort of claim at the point that they were in production,
right,
before the Viacom merger between CBS and Paramount. I don't know if they can make any sort of claim to that Sovereign class ship design. I wonder if it's only going to be the Enterprise F that we ever get to see an appearance of, if it makes an appearance in season one.
I mean,
season two is up for grabs for sure.
Does anyone love the E that much?
No, we didn't get to see much of it. And it seemed like a far more sterile sort of ship.
Yeah.
Bound experience than the D, which was kind of it looked like the coziest starship you could ever imagine.
Yeah. So I would just jump to the F, honestly. It's not, I mean, I'm sure some people out there are nostalgic for the E, but I think the majority are more than happy to go to the F. It's more exciting just to see what the next phase of the Enterprise is like, and you can kind of do something new that grabs viewers.
If they jump to the F, do you think, if you look at the bridge, it's got to be that horseshoe shape that is so iconic?
I think so. I think you want it to be
a little distinct, of course. But
the E looked very movie ready. Like it looked like an action set.
A very 90s movie ready.
Yes, yes. Versus what I think the Enterprise should be for a TV show, which is more of a space for its, you know, participants to kind of occupy, like to actually kind of feel lived in. Like, the E in the movies did not feel lived in. It just felt like a battle bridge in most senses, you know?
Well, even, like, Troy had, like, a battle console, like, in that, which was interesting.
I mean, movies, you know, were largely about action.
Yeah.
And so the Enterprise fulfilled
that. And llamas. Don't forget the llamas in Insurrection. Yeah.
And it fulfilled that purpose visually as well as, you know, functionally.
Yeah.
So
what do you hope to hear from Troy's character? Like, we know that she's going to be making an appearance as well. I think she just got sidelined so often.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't want any more awkward ice cream scenes with Barkley.
Okay.
Please, God, no, I can't take them.
Okay. Okay. I hope that she gets some sort of agency.
Yes. Me too. Yeah.
I'm skeptical that they're somehow going to be able to reverse course. They just never really knew what to do with her. That's unfortunate because we all know when they gave her good stuff to do, like Marina Sirtis was really great at it. Like, just think of Face of the Enemy, for example, you know, like that sort of stuff.
Well, I hope her and Riker aren't just written as Picard's old friends.
And I hope Troy's not just written as Riker's wife.
Sure.
Like, that's my fear there. But I don't know how you give her agency if she's living in a cabin. Mm-hmm. Like, what can she really do to help out with the mission? I think the great thing, she was always very much showcased as an advisor to Picard.
Yeah.
I want to have her and Patrick Stewart get a one-on-one scene where she's just talking to him like, what is going on in your head right now? Like, let me help you. Like,
I would
think
have
that's
to
what they need
imagine
to
that that's probably in the cards, assuming the show has time for it.
My fear, though, is that it's just going to be like her and then Frakes will at least be next to her.
Yeah.
She deserves a one-on-one scene with Patrick Stewart.
I do have a bad feeling that it's going to be Picard just swinging by to talk about, I have a decision to make. Do I do this or do I go back to the vineyard?
Yeah.
You're going to do what you're going to do. End of scene. You know, like, I don't get the sense they're going to be real movers and shakers when it comes to
the mythology.
Yeah, to the narrative of Picard. Yeah. To me, like, Seven is the interesting one that I've seen teased.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really know what her role is going to play, but I think what we are seeing is that there is a big contingent of former Borg drones that will be playing a part. We know that's, Third of Five, a.k.a. Hugh, will be featured. I find this very fascinating. Jeri Ryan, she talked at the last convention about finding Seven's new voice, which I think was great. We got to see that in the trailer, too. I'm very excited, and I can't believe we never thought about the idea of bringing Seven back for an appearance on Star Trek Picard. It sounds like more than just like a Riker and Troy-esque cameo sort of thing. It seems as if she's going to be way more part of the narrative.
Yeah, Jeri Ryan kind of slipped about appearing, it sounded like, in more than one episode.
Yeah.
So that's something. The thing about Seven is, as opposed to Riker and Troy, when you wrap up Star Trek Nemesis, whether you like the ending or not, you get a sense of where Riker and Troy were going. But with Seven, the finale of Voyager doesn't give you any sense. It's like, well, they made it back to Earth. Now what? You know?
Chakotay keeps transporting into her quarters.
Yeah. And so that's what that's one of the big mysteries that I'm looking forward to finding out is just, what did Seven even do these last few years? I could always kind of, you know, figure out what Riker and Troy were probably doing. Versus Seven, I have no idea. And, you know, I didn't read any novels or anything to give me ideas. So I'm just...
You just wrote novels.
Yeah. I'm just a total blank slate right now. And I can't wait to find out what that character has been doing. She obviously never fell victim to the alternate future that she died in. You know, that never proved true.
Thankfully.
So that's good.
Although, in the years that have gone by between... So Endgame took place in the future and the present?
Yeah.
We just did our Endgame review.
Yeah.
How many years was that?
It was a commemorative anniversary for an important number, right? Like, was it 20 years or something like that?
Like, I don't think it was 30 years. I think it was I think what we determined, though, is like...
20 years sounds about right. Maybe 25 because Harry had like kind of grayish hair, but he was more like middle-aged.
But I think what we determined, though, is that the actors right now look way better today than the characters as featured in the future. And I think we were laughing because as much time has passed in the real world as had passed on the show. So, hey, good on you. Jeri Ryan looks pretty much the same now as she did on the show. So it's going to be fun to see her teaming up, presumably with Hugh. They've got to have like a conversation with each other.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
So that's going to be really exciting to see. And I mean, so much of Seven's life was obviously with all the Voyager cast. I mean, that's all of her life we've seen on Star Trek. And so I'm really curious how Picard works her in. Are there mentions of some of those cast members?
Yeah.
You know, that's really going to be really interesting to me because obviously as a Picard...
I want a Naomi Wildman shout out. Eat Chip.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, as a Picard series, I have to imagine they're going to want to keep the amount of Voyager references to somewhat of a minimum. But I think...
You don't think she's going to be talking about Ichim in her counseling sessions with Hugh?
If she does, we will be overjoyed, and you know it.
But the thing is, I bet what she says is like, you know what? I tried counseling one former Borg drone, and I just lost him.
Yeah.
Like he
was a miserable failure.
He's no longer with us. And,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, but Yeah, I am just looking forward to seeing how they kind of maybe try to pay off her relationships with Voyager in as, I'm sure, concise and simple a way as they can, so it doesn't confuse new viewers to Picard.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool.
All right. The new characters, I know nothing about them.
Yeah, I'm back in Discovery Town where it's season one Discovery, where I'm just like, don't know.
I mean, you've got some great actors. I love Alison Pill.
Yeah.
I hope that she kind of brings kind of maybe that Paul Stamets sort of energy, not in terms of like negative sort of snide remarks, but more kind of the out there kind of comedic elements sometimes, you know, the characters that we're not usually used to seeing in Star Trek, I think, or even what Tig Notaro was doing last season, you know, like I think we need to see more of that in Star Trek. And I think Alison Pill might be the perfect performer to do that.
And I mean, she excels at playing smart characters. So I'm looking forward to seeing her as someone who's, you know, capable on Star Trek.
Well, she asked me if she could play you in the subspace transmissions biopic one of these days.
No, I said smart characters.
Oh, my mistake. Yeah. So, other than that, I'm not actually all that familiar with any of the other.
No.
Oh, I think I called her Michelle Hernandez. I think it's actually Michelle Hurd, right?
Yes.
Sorry, apologies.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've just seen her on Ash vs. the Evil Dead, but I don't really have a vibe going off of that show, what she would do on a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
Okay. She seems more than up to doing like physical action. I'll say that much.
Yeah.
So there you go.
All right. So look,
we're close. We don't even have to like sit there and really predict the far off future. We're like a couple weeks away.
Is it kind of like surreal to see, like, I'm at the gym and I'm seeing like Star Trek Picard commercials playing on TV. It's kind of weird, you know, like were we in the theater and we saw like a Star Trek Picard commercial at one point? Does that ring a bell?
Possibly. It's quite possible.
Yeah. You know, so it looks as if, at least in Canada, that CTV is putting some dollars into advertising. The thing that we also know that...
the commercial was before Cats.
But we do know that, just in terms of ratings, Discovery airs on CTV Sci-Fi Channel up here in Canada, and the ratings were very, very healthy. Like, Canada, an incredibly small market, but if it's indicative of, you know, consumer demand in other markets around the world, you know, Discovery successful. So think about just how successful Star Trek Picard, how many eyes will be on it, and how many more subscribers CBS All Access is going to be getting, which will in turn ensure that we get more Star Trek content moving forward. I think this is fantastic.
And we already know we're getting a Picard season two.
Yeah.
So that's exciting too.
So.
Yeah. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Cam, we are going to be wrapping up Star Trek Enterprise. It's not going to be our typical two-parter as we usually do it because we have Demons and Terra Prime. I was going to say Terra Nova.
I think that was another episode.
That's another episode. Yeah. But we have the Demons and Terra Prime two-parter, and then we just have to do it. We have to throw These Are the Voyages into the mix so we can do kind of full wrap-up of Enterprise. So I think it's going to be fun. We'll have lots to say about all three of those episodes.
It'll be a series of highs and lows.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So I'm actually looking forward to that. Not to spoil anything, but at least one of those episodes is rather frustrating for viewers.
Yeah.
So tune in. You'll love it.
Okay. So you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in view screen. Bring up that static image of Picard. Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-A-P-O-R-T-O. O is in 1 year until I visit my daughter on Earth. N.
Okay. So until next time, the arena is closed.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. But when I see you hanging about with anyone, it's not unusual to see me cry.
Transfer complete.